I'm Marissa Norcross.
And I'm Dave Freund, so this must be the next page. Hey, I got my name right that time.
Yeah, we can add that first one to our blooper reel.
We can add it to the bloopers. Folks, I forgot my name. Oh, well.
I've done that.
It's an age thing. It's an age thing. I'm getting older, but that's all right. So how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm terrific. You know, I have felt well for over a week.
That's great. That's really good.
It's been
good.
So long. Yeah, no, I'm feeling really well. Mm-hmm. And today we're on part two of what's probably going to be a four-part series on what it takes to be a great leader. And today we're going to talk about courage and vision. So let's start with the courage one. Mm-hmm. And I love this. Is a quote that's in my post from Winston Churchill. Courage is rightly esteemed first among human qualities because it is the quality which guarantees all others. Well, I just think that's awesome. Mm-hmm. You know, because what he's saying is that if you don't have courage, you won't ever live true to your values. Mm-hmm. You won't live true to your character. You won't live true to your plans, your goals, your dreams, your hopes. Because whenever we're trying to, you know, so here's another thing about leadership. One of John Maxwell's famous quotes, anything worthwhile is uphill. And it's uphill because there's always resistance. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times the resistance that we get is first from ourselves, our own doubts and our fears type of thing, and then from others. So it's a continuous battle to push through the difficult scenarios that we come across. And the first thing we need to realize is that everybody is afraid of something. Everybody is. I don't care. I've never met a person that doesn't have some sort of a fear. I am petrified of snakes. If somebody wanted to kill me, torture me, just put me in a room with a bunch of snakes, and I would probably short circuit and die because I cannot handle snakes. People say, no, you just need to be, you know, conditioned. And if you could go to some treatment and they would let you hold, and I'm not holding them, sorry.
Exposure therapy.
Exposure therapy. I'm okay with just being afraid of stinking snakes. You know, my feeling is the only good snake is a dead snake. But so if all of us have fears, we have to learn to overcome them. Now, I just said, I don't want to overcome my fear of snakes. Because I know what it would take to get me to overcome it. So that's a choice thing. So we can call that whatever. Maybe I'm just a wimp. But there's other things that I'm afraid of. There's some people, I think I heard this, that the number one fear when people have been interviewed is the fear of public speaking.
Yeah, that's what came to mind when we first started talking about it.
Now, I'm like, why? Mm-hmm. Why are people afraid of public speaking? I'm always ready to make a fool of myself publicly. So public speaking is never an issue for me. But for some people, you know, they would rather be in a room full of snakes than public speaking. So one of the things that I was thinking about, Marissa, when I thought about this courage thing is all of us, if we want to grow professionally, if we really want to become great leaders, we have to become comfortable being uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And that's really what courage is. Courage is not an absence of fear. Courage is doing it afraid. So as I was thinking about, and I'm going to ask you in a minute or so, what are some fears that you think leaders might have to wrestle with? But so I'm actually giving you a moment to think about this rather than just drop it on you. But, you know, one of the fears that I frequently have, still have, is the fear of disappointing people.
That was mine. That was my answer.
Was it? All right, so keep thinking. I'm just afraid to confront situations. I'm afraid that people are going to accuse me of causing harm. Mm-hmm. But the reality is that really what's the worst thing that can happen? If I have to, as a leader, if I have to confront a situation, you know, have a conversation with an employee, you know, with a customer, with a vendor that is going to be difficult, really, what's the worst thing that can happen? They're upset with me. Maybe we stop doing business. Maybe they quit. Nobody died. Mm-hmm. It's not that big of a deal. And so if we I think the key for the leader is to really focus on the decisions they're making. Are they based on sound decisions, you know, where good character, we've have the facts, this is something that needs to be addressed, we're taking into consideration the well-being of everyone. You just make the decision and you move on.
Right.
So that for me is like one of my biggest drawbacks. And I've told people in a lot of my classes, if you were to ask me what my greatest weakness was as a leader, it was I did not confront behavioral issues with employees quick enough.
Mm-hmm.
I kept thinking they'd get better. Well, they typically don't. So did you think of a fear that folks might have to deal with as a leader other than disappointing people?
I think there's an overwhelming anxiety around succeeding and therefore a fear of failure. Oftentimes I think there's a fear of, you know, financial failure.
Sure.
But then also the pressure of, you know, big investments that don't end up being worthwhile and that kind of fear. The other thing that I thought of too was almost like the what if fear that a lot of us face, whether it be as leaders or as people, and implementing that courage to realize what, you know, is really important and what lines up with your values and your mission, and saying no to the things that maybe seem really good but aren't a great match. Because I think that's something that we often don't align with courage, is saying no.
Yes, you know, I love that.
We often look at it as something, you know, like, okay, I'm going to be courageous. I'm going to say yes to doing this. I'm going to do it afraid.
Yep.
But I think we also need to use it to say no to things that aren't great. Maybe they're good or maybe they're bad, but if they're not great, I think we have to have that courage to say, you know what, this isn't a good fit for me right now. This isn't where I need to be investing my time, my money, because I can say yes to other better things.
Very good. The courage to say no to the good so that you can say yes to the best.
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome. You know, that's one that I completely missed. And I love how you articulated the decision-making process. You know, is it in keeping with my values?
Mm-hmm.
Is it in keeping with, you know, the vision, which is what we're going to talk about next, or my goals? You know, those are, and I love how you based it on the values piece, because that's really who we are.
Mm-hmm.
And if we aren't true to who we are, well, we've just failed the character piece, which we said last week was our foundation point for leadership. So I love that, the courage to say no. Yeah, because, you know, we're bombarded with opportunities. That doesn't mean they're good opportunities.
Right.
We may be tempted to go down paths that just distract us, that push us off of our path. The other one is, as you were saying that, and this goes back to something that, you know, we've talked about on previous podcasts, sometimes the courage to say no at work. Because I have to say yes at home.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the things that happens is people who are extremely dedicated, people who are very gifted, people who are extremely resourceful, become the go-to people in organizations. And nobody's intending them to do that. But as long as if you keep saying yes, they're going to keep giving it to you.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you have to say, you know, I'm sorry, I really can't do that right now. I don't have the bandwidth. I don't have the capacity to do it.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that's interesting about the courage piece in leadership is that our growth in leadership will only expand to the proportion of our courage. So if we aren't willing to step out of our comfort zone and try something new, we can't grow. I have a coaching client who is extremely tactical. He's an excellent manager. And in my conversation with him, kicking off our coaching relationship, I realized that he's really happy with how tactical he is, because he's clearly an exceptional manager. But the problem is managers only do the best with situations the way they are, and leaders change the situation for the better. That's one of Carly Fiorina's points. So what in his here was his concern. He said, I don't want you to help me become soft so I lose my ability to be a great tactical manager. And the whole point was he's trying to figure out how his boss is saying you need to relate better with people. You need to connect better with people. You need to mentor people. You need to develop people. And he's his whole career has been based on being the person that makes the decision quickly based on the facts that are there and tells people what to do. And what I tried to help him realize, and I think by the time we finished our conversation, I think I had him at least thinking along these lines, that the objective of my working with him is for him to have the courage to step out of his comfort zone of giving the direction to building relationships with people so that they want to do what he wants done rather than him telling them they have to do it. You know, he needs to find ways to connect with a younger generation that would like to know the why behind what he's asking. So really, his leadership is going to be capped if he's unwilling to be courageous and try a different model. So even at that, it's expanding. Stepping out of your comfort zone truly expands your leadership.
Mm-hmm.
And really, the only way we grow is to do things that are outside our comfort zone. So we just have to have the courage to act.
Mm-hmm.
Marissa, when you made the decision to cut back on your hours,
mm-hmm.
what were some of the fears?
That I, you know, wouldn't be successful at both with my job and then also just like as a full-time mom. There were definitely some fears about how it would change our family dynamic and in our routines. And then also just a fear of how it would change my dynamic with my coworkers and how the office dynamics and things like that. So, I mean, there's definitely a lot of thought that had to go into it.
Sure, sure. but you had to act and do it afraid.
Yes. And, you know, I had to put it through that lens, that filter of my values and my goals and the season of my life that I'm in right now.
Exactly. Exactly. So, and I hope you don't mind that I asked you that question, but I wanted to show people that that even that decision took great courage because you were going from what was comfortable or known to something that's unknown. And that's something that leaders always do. Great leaders are always shifting from what is known and comfortable to what is unknown for their organizations, not just for themselves. They start with themselves, but then they lead their organization through this unknown path as well, because even the organization has to do the things that are a little bit uncomfortable so that they can grow and be better. And really, and so I think that as I was listening to you, you had a vision for what the future state of your family looked like. And that vision is what drove you to have the courage to make the decision. That's why I kind of put courage and vision together. So the second point in my post this week was vision. And I love where John Maxwell wrote, a great leader's courage to fulfill his vision comes from passion, not position. To me, that was huge. We talked some time ago about the five levels of leadership, and we kind of went through each one of those levels a week at a time. And, you know, the first level of leadership is the level of position. And that's the most ineffective level. It's a short-lived position of leadership. Excuse me. But a vision for a leader doesn't come from that. It comes from the passion that they have for the improved state. You know, and really, it's a better relationship. It's a better work setting. They're looking for a better process. They're looking for a better life. Whenever we are looking for something better, we have to have a vision of what it is that we're looking for. And as I was writing this, I thought to myself, well, what if somebody says they don't have vision? They can't think of a vision. And so then I did a little bit of thought, thinking of, so where does our vision come from? Well, we really need to start by looking inside ourselves. You know, what our history, our past history has a lot to do with our vision. It gives us this grounding piece of where we've come from. But then I think too that we have to spend time looking at things also, like what are our natural gifts? So, okay, where did I come from? What's my giftedness? You know, what is it that I do really, really well? And then we get to, what is it that I really want out of my life? And which reminds me of, you know, one of our podcasts that actually were, who was the group that was?
The Spice Girls.
Is it the Spice Girls? I was going to say the Spice Girls.
Yes.
That had a little guest visit from the Spice Girls, so to speak.
Yep.
You know, what do we really, really want?
Mm-hmm.
And if we take that, where we've been, what's our giftedness, and what do we really, really want, we can build a vision from that.
Mm-hmm.
And I really encourage people to think about their life vision. You know, where would you like to be in your relationships, in your career, financially? Where would you like to be in 5, 10, 15, or 20 years, or 30 years?
Mm-hmm.
I have to say, and people may think this is strange, but, you know, so my wife and I, we got married when we were 20. The best decision I ever made in my life, and I would hope that she would say the same thing. But in our first couple years of marriage, I started thinking, well, you know, it really could be that we could be married 50, 60, 70 years.
Mm-hmm.
That was really a vision that I had. You know, what would it be like to just be blessed to be able to travel so many years with this amazing woman? And, you know, so now we're 37 years into that. And I just think it's amazing. But it comes from having a vision of the state of what I'd like it to be. And then we've talked about this in other podcasts, you know, whether we call it the law of attraction, whatever we want to call it, you know, we're envisioning where we'd like to go, and all of a sudden the resources to get there come in play.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why vision is critical for a leader. Because if they don't have vision, where are they going to go?
Right.
You know, it's really sad. And there's, it's like the ancient proverb that says, you know, where there is no vision, the people perish.
Mm-hmm.
So imagine an organization where there's no vision.
Mm-hmm. And I think too, you know, you mentioned expanding, you know, that vision into your life, into your yes. relationships, but also thinking about from a business standpoint, your business sector as a whole, or your community, or whoever you serve. So if, you know, if you're business to business, think about your customers and how, you know, you're impacting their businesses and their lives, or if you sell directly right. to consumers, you know, how are you contributing to their health or well-being or sanity or whatever, you know, whatever
sure.
value you add, thinking about what your vision is for the greater good or the whole.
Right.
And thinking big, because everything we do has a much larger effect than the immediate outcome.
Exactly. That's awesome. And I think this is where organizations, communities fall down,
mm-hmm.
is because there really is no cohesive vision that for a better future,
mm-hmm.
and how that might affect other people.
Right.
You know, and so that's why I think there's so many people that are down on, like, for instance, Central New York. You know, I love Central New York. I think we need some vision here. Mm-hmm. I think we need... Mm-hmm. We need to understand how we can bring people together to make this an amazing place. Because
mm-hmm.
it, well, to enhance it, it already is an amazing place. But one of the things that for us to be able to do some of this is we have to learn to think in a different way. And you touched on it there where you said, you know, how do my actions affect other people? And envision that. I'm thinking of an organization that I know fairly well that, if you would ask the people that are there at the top, they would say, oh, they're leading with great vision. Yeah, the problem is the vision they see is about 50 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And there is no future looking in this organization. and their techniques of leading people are 30 years, 40 years old, 50 years old. And then they wonder why they can't grow, why they can't get out of their own way, because there is no future vision.
Mm-hmm.
They aren't thinking they aren't visionary in their thinking. And the reason is because they're not exposing themselves to different thoughts,
mm-hmm.
different thought leaders and different, you know, that's why I think it's so critical for a leader to be on a growth path, because if we're only listening to the things we've always listened to and the people we've always listened to, we're never going to grow. We're just going to be stuck.
Right.
How, it's a question that's, I'm trying to find the best way to put it, but as a younger person, because you're my daughter's, you're younger than my daughter. Mm-hmm. You're in between my sons.
Yeah.
So how does a person, when they're in their late 20s, pull a vision together? I mean, I gave you something mm-hmm. from my perspective.
Right.
But if you know, when you try to think about the future, how do you come up with that vision for you?
I think, which we've talked about before, a vision board is helpful to kind of take some of your ideas and put them all together on a board. Pinterest, you know, is like a thing because of vision boards, I think.
Sure. You know? Okay. That's good. But, what are other people thinking?
But
and
I, you know, using it as a way to organize. But I think also assessing your values and then looking at all the aspects of your life. So what, you know, I think about, okay, what is my vision for my family? What is my vision for my career? What is, you know, my vision for 5 years, 10 years, 20 years? And then almost putting, like, it's like a Venn diagram, kind of finding where things match up and then aligning them all. That's probably a really awful description of what goes on in my head, but
I think it made sense. It made a lot of sense. You know, and my reason for asking it was because, you know, all that people would hear is, okay, so what's this 57-year-old guy saying? And how does he get his vision? Well, what happens if I'm 28 or 29?
Mm-hmm. I think I think it can be overwhelming. For sure. And I think it's something that changes.
Absolutely.
Maybe more often now than it did before, just because the world is changing so quickly.
Sure.
And, you know, we just have more resources at our fingertips, I think. But
right.
I think for me, it's a seasonal thing, really. I mean, it's like assessing where you are right now and where you want to be, and then reevaluating quarterly probably and saying, perfect. Like, is this still our vision? You know, is this still our plan? And if not, like, let's quit spinning our wheels and really work towards where we're more aligned.
Very good. That was, Marissa, that was awesome. And I love the fact that you talked about tweaking the vision, adjusting the vision. Yeah, this is what I'd like to do. This is where I'd like to be. But I don't know necessarily what resources will be presented when. And I may all of a sudden, you know, my vision for retirement changed when I left my corporate job to join MACNY. All of a sudden, the first age that I was thinking about retiring seems way too young. So what does that mean? Well, maybe that means that it looks differently. Maybe it means that it's delayed four, five, 6 years. Maybe it means that it's a partial type of retirement thing. I don't know. And I think too many people get stuck in trying to define it too much that they become paralyzed in analyzing data. And, you know, I know someone that is always struggling to figure out what exactly the plan is for his life, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
Well, okay, have this idea and get up in the morning and start walking. The key is get up in the morning and start walking.
Well, your future is made up of all of these individual present moments. So,
exactly.
You know, and you have a choice what you can do right now.
Right.
That
right.
will lead to your future.
Very good. Awesome. So we talked about courage and vision.
Mm-hmm.
Courage is necessary because if we don't have courage, we aren't going to do anything as a leader. And vision is necessary because we need to know where we're going.
Mm-hmm.
We need to have that forward momentum and that destined, I can't say destination because we're going to talk about destination disease in one of my podcasts, I'm sure. But that direction that we're going. So it's not a destination, it's a direction. And the beauty about leadership, actually the beauty about life, is that when we have a direction we're walking, every day is a success.
Yep.
Because we're processing the experiences, the feelings, the blessings, the trials, whatever they might be, and making the most out of that day. So, do you know what we're talking about next week?
I'm sure you'll tell me.
These are going to surprise you. These are what it goes right into. What does it take to be a great leader? Part 3, teachability and humility. So I thought I would think outside the box.
Yeah.
A week.
Yeah, I'm excited.
So that's
interesting.
It.
All right.
You know what? The sun's not shining today. It's cloudy.
I know.
It was shining earlier, but it's cloudy.
It's okay.
But that's okay. You had shared earlier before we started that you went to the zoo.
Yep. Went to the zoo. Got it rained on a little bit, but it was nice. It was like 71 degrees.
Wow.
So I will take that. I will take that any day.
Does Isla have a favorite animal?
She likes to see the flamingos when they're out. And
okay.
The bison. I'm really not sure if they're bison or buffalo. Is there a difference?
I have no idea.
She calls them bison. So that's what we call them. But she likes to see them. And sometimes they like get really active and it's exciting for her. So
cool.
Yeah.
So we'll have to rely on our listeners to tell us if a bison and a buffalo are the same thing.
I mean, I think they're different. I think the zoo has bison. I don't know.
Okay.
I like the way she says bison. It's really cute when she says it. So we'll just stick with that.
We'll take her word for it. So we do want to remind people, you know, this is episode 97. So we've only got a couple more episodes before. Well, we've got 3 episodes from this week will be our 100th episode, which, you know, we're going to answer any questions that people have. We'll try to get Engineer Tim to give us some bloopers or some cough tracks or something. At least me not remembering how to say
you saying your name.
That might be there as well. So please also, you know, if you could go onto iTunes and give us a review, that would be awesome. So with that, I'm Dave Freund.
I'm Marissa Norcross.
And this was The Next Page.